points that are easily recognized from what we've already looked at. And
the points that we make are the points that are made in this first speech are points that come from the history that we've already looked at. And so we will be able to understand this very well, I think. So in chapter 1, the theme of this speech is don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of the things that they had been afraid of before at Kadesh Barnea. And so the theme is don't be afraid. So keep that theme in mind as we look at the things that are said. Now, we've already gone over the first couple of chapters or so. So look in verses 1 through 5. This is the introduction, giving the setting. This is where the speeches took place and everything. And so then the second one, verses 6 through 25, is where he recounts the journey from Horeb or Mount Sinai to Kadesh Barnea. Now see, all you have to do is to just say, okay, I remember that. We studied that. That was from Numbers 10, on into Numbers 20, 21, 22, and particularly in 21, Numbers 21, they got to, roll the tape back. That was from Numbers 10 to Numbers 13, Kadesh Barnea. Okay, remember Numbers 13, that's where the spies were set up. Okay, so that's what is dealt with in through verse 25. Look in verse 23 and 24, 25, chapter 1 there. The thing pleased me well, and I took 12 men of you, one man from for every tribe, and they turned and went up into the hill country and came into the valley of Eshcol and spied it out. And they took of the fruit of the land in their hands and brought it down unto us and brought us word again and said, it is a good land which Jehovah our God giveth unto us. So, see, we remember that, don't we? We remember that. Okay. Now, continuing in verses 26 through 46, this is the end of the rest of that chapter. You remember what happened next? See, the disobedience at Kadesh, and they're sentenced to wander in the wilderness. So, that's what they set out doing. So, in verse 46, look at the last verse in the chapter. So ye abode in Kadesh many days according unto the days that ye abode there. So now chapter 2. In the first 8 verses of chapter 2, you will notice and remember that he makes the point, you leave the land of the Edomites alone. Okay? Leave the land of the Edomites alone. Leave the land of Esau alone. And then, look in 8, verse 8, through verse 15, he says, leave the land of Moab alone. Now, are you remembering that? Do you find you remember this? See, he says, you leave their land alone. Why? Why? They were kinsmen. That's right. So, you leave their land alone. And remember that in verses 13, 14, and 15 of chapter 2, he says, we went over the brook Zered, and the days in which we came from Kadesh Barnea until we came over the brook Zered were 38 years, until all the generation of the men of war were consumed from the midst of the camp, as the Lord sware unto them. And we made the point also, moreover, the hand of the Lord was against them to destroy them from the midst of the camp until they were consumed. And remember, I told you that what that means is that God took a special concern and attention to the fact that these men who were above 20, who would not go up and fight, that they were going to be left in the wilderness. That they would die in the wilderness. So, in other words, God was going to make sure of that, and did make sure of that. Well, now, in verses 16 through 22, look at the point. Leave the land of the Ammonites alone. Same reason, right? So, do you remember that Edom was brother to Jacob, right? Edom was brother to Israel. Moab and Ammon were descendants of Lot, the nephew of Abraham. So that's how they were kin. Because they were kin, he says, leave them alone. Now, notice the connection with the Edomites, the Moabites, the Ammonites, and the Philistines in all those verses. The point is made that they all encountered giants. And yet, what did they do? They conquered them, and they went ahead and settled there. And so, you know, if you were an Israelite, you'd be thinking, well, yeah, we had the chance, and we were too chicken. And here the Edomites did it, and the Moabites did it, and the Ammonites did it, and the Philistines did it. They weren't even the chosen people of God, with God's promise to be with them, and having been given the promise of the land. You see what all Israel had on its side, and yet they hadn't done it. And so here he's making the point. Now they faced these giants, and they conquered them. So you can too. Now the defeat of Sihon, look in this, chapter 2, verses 26. He asks Sihon for permission and to go up. And there are a couple of verses we'll look at in particular here. Look in verse 34. Verse 34, we took all his cities at that time and utterly destroyed every inhabited city. Now, when it says utterly destroyed, the context makes it clear that it was the people, that God allowed them to keep the cities, the buildings, and the animals. So that was the meaning here. And so they did that with Sihon. They took all of his cities. And look in verse 36. From Aroer, which is on the edge of the valley of the Arnon, and from the city that is in the valley, even unto Gilead, there was not a city too high for us. Now what's the point there? What were the two things that Israel had been afraid of? The walled cities and the giants. So I trust it is as clear as can be what Moses is doing here, dealing with the people. And he will do even more. But now this is what he's emphasizing with them. Now see, here is the land that belonged to Sihon. This was his kingdom. And so they took that kingdom. And so they took that one. No city too high. Now the defeat of Og. Look in chapter 3, verses 1 through 11. So it talks about the defeat of Og. Og was to the north. Look at this, verses 4 and 5. And we took all his cities at that time. There was not a city which we took not from them. 70 cities, all the region of Argob, the kingdom of Og in Bashan. All these were cities fortified with high walls, gates, and bars. So again, you see the point he's making? That was the very description that the spies had given of the cities. And so he's making the point. How many cities did we take? So do you see how the theme is? Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of the things that intimidated you before. Don't be afraid of those, that you will be able to take them. So notice also in verse 11, this Og. For only Og, king of Bashan, remained of the remnant of the Rephaim. Behold, his bedstead was a bedstead of iron. Is it not in Rabbah of the children of Ammon? 9 cubits was the length thereof, and 4 cubits the breadth of it after the cubit of a man. So that would mean that it was approximately 14 feet long and 6 feet wide. And the point is, it needed to be that big. And it was not made of bamboo What was it made of? Because how much would you guess he weighed? Who knows? But so now look, why does Moses mention that fact? The giants. So what an emphasis, right? So I just want you to see that. And it's so interesting when you really read things like this and can see that, oh yeah, I can see what Moses is doing. He's getting those people prepared so that they won't do what they did before. They won't do that again. And they've already had the experience to let them know, we can do it. We've already conquered Og. We've already conquered all these cities. And the Edomites and the Moabites and the Ammonites and the Philistines have conquered all the giants in their territory. And we'll be able to do it too. So, you notice then that the kingdom of Og was up here in this part. This is the part that was called Bashan. So, that means they have conquered this east side of the Jordan, which is called Transjordan. Look back now in chapter 2 and verse 31. I want you to see a point that is specified by God. Verse 31. Now this whole business about their conquering the east side of the Jordan when Canaan was the part on the west side. That was what God had originally promised. Now look in verse 31. And the Lord said unto me, Behold, I have begun to deliver up Sihon and his land before thee. Begin to possess, that thou mayest inherit his land. So, you see he uses that word, inherit. So what God is saying here is that since Sihon insisted on fighting you, and Og insisted on fighting you, I am giving their land to you as well. So he uses that word inherit. So you will receive that land as a gift from me. So go ahead and take it. And it is yours. So I just want you to see that it wasn't a thing that the Israelites just, you know, took their own initiative and they said, hey, you know, if we do this, we'll have all this land too. God says, yes, you do that, and I will cause you to inherit that land too. By the way, you know, when you think about the premillennial claim that God did not fulfill his promise of the land at the time, and that therefore that promise waits to be fulfilled, that he didn't give them all the land. Well, since Canaan is the land God promised to Abraham, and he gave them the east side too, He didn't only not give them less. He gave them more. So that claim just can't be sustained. To Reuben and Gad, he gave from the river Arnon. We're going to look at this on a map. He gave them from the river Arnon to the river Jabbok. Look at these verses. Look at these verses in chapter 3. In chapter 3, and the first one is, look at verse 16. And unto the Reubenites and unto the Gadites, I gave from Gilead even unto the valley of the Arnon, the middle of the valley, and the border thereof, even unto the river Jabbok, which is the border of the children of Ammon. And then look in verse 12. And this land we took in possession at that time from Aroer, which is by the valley of the Arnon, and half the hill country of Gilead, and the cities thereof gave I unto the Reubenites and to the Gadites. All right, now we'll look at that verse again in a moment. All right, let's see. The other half right here, verse 13, look at the other half of, or not the other half, but verse 13. And the rest of Gilead and all Bashan, the kingdom of Og, gave I unto the half tribe of Manasseh, all the region of Argob, even all Bashan. So if you look at the information there, to Reuben and Gad, he gives from the river Arnon in the south to the river Jabbok, which is about halfway between the Dead Sea and the Sea of Galilee, and the other half of Gilead and all Bashan he gave to the half tribe of Manasseh. Now, looking at this map, see, down here is the river Arnon. So he gave them from the river Arnon up here to the river Jabbok. And then he says, and the other half of Gilead he gave to Manasseh. So, yes. Yeah. Yeah, which verse are you looking at now?
16, I believe it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
In
the middle of the river.
Right. And the idea is that the valley was the dividing line. So half was to one and half the other. So. So look at that Transjordan. That's the thing now. Transjordan. Tell you what. Tell me the tribes now that inherited on the east side of the Jordan. Boy, that was a chorus, wasn't it? Reuben, Gad, and the half tribe of Manasseh. Now you knew that, didn't you? You knew that. I knew you knew that. You're just shy. Reuben, Gad, and the half tribe of Manasseh. So, look back one more time. See, Reuben is in the south, Gad is in the central part, and Manasseh is in the north. So there you are, Reuben, Gad, and the half tribe of Manasseh. So, in chapter 3, verses 18 through 22, note that the soldiers of Reuben, Gad, and the half tribe of Manasseh promised to go with their brethren to take Canaan. Now, what happened when the Transjordan tribes first brought up the idea, hey, we want our place over here on this east side? What trouble did that cause? That's right. Right. Did Moses get upset about that? You remember? Yes, he definitely got upset about that. But when they explained, and they told him what they would do, and everything, then that was fine. And I mean, he was very specific. You know, he said, "If you will indeed do that, then that will be fine. If you will not do that, do you remember what he said? Then your inheritance will have to be what? On the Canaan side with the other tribes." So. Yeah, that's what he said, you know. So they made good on that. They really did. They made good on that. They did what they said they would do. And then he tells, look here in the last paragraph. Look in this last paragraph. This should be something you and I can identify with, because we're used to begging until we get our way. Very often we just beg until we get our way. So here he is. What's the request he makes of God? What is it that Moses wants to do? Oh, I want to go over into that Canaan land. I want to go over there. Moses, do you know why you can't go? Do you know why I told you can't go? Yeah, Moses knows that very well. Oh, I know, but... See? I know, but... And I feel sorry for him, I really do. Let me go over, I pray thee, and see the good land that is beyond the Jordan, that goodly mountain and Lebanon. But the Lord was wroth with me for your sakes. You provoked me. The Lord was wroth with me for your sakes. And the Lord said, now look at this, let it suffice thee, speak no more unto me of this matter. And so you know what Moses did? He didn't speak to God anymore of this matter. Because God said, no, this is it. I'm not going to give on that. So Moses said, okay. But God told him, you get up unto the top of Pisgah and lift up your eyes westward and northward and so on. Now what is another name for this Pisgah that we sometimes hear? Do you remember another name for that mountain? Nebo. That's right. And once again, let me just go back here to this map. Now, Nebo was approximately right here, right about there. And when you, remember that when you say, well, now, I thought it was right there on the edge. Well, when you think about the edge, you've got to get to the edge. And you've got these cliffs rising up here, way up there, several thousand feet. And by the time it has risen several thousand feet, guess where it is? Miles back from the edge. So does everybody understand that? That used to be a thing that when I looked at one of these maps, I didn't understand. And that is that when you've got sloping land, and especially rugged, very steep land that comes down to a shore, and it, unless it's just a sheer cliff, but these are not just sheer cliffs. So here it goes back like that, way up there, several thousand feet, and by the time you get to the mountaintop, you're a few miles away from the edge of the water itself. And so I just wanted to make that clear. So look, as he stands on that mountaintop, which would be higher, it'd be higher than most of the territory over here. There'd be very few places over here. Down near Hebron might be one, and maybe up here somewhere in Benjamin. But most of this whole territory would be considerably lower in elevation. So that meant that he could stand up there and he could look and he could see all the way up here to the north. He could see Galilee. He could see all the way. And of course, directly across from him, he could see the hill country of what would be the hill country of Judah. And it'd be no problem to see the hill country of Ephraim up here. But the whole country, he could see it. And so he had asked God, let me go over and see the good land. So God says, no, I'm not going to let you go over, but I will let you see it. Because God, in other words, Moses was saved. Moses was not lost. When he died, God buried him. And do you remember who appeared with Jesus at the Transfiguration? Moses and Elijah. There's no question about Moses. But you know, in other words, doesn't this make the point that there are sometimes temporal consequences which are not averted by your penitence? There's a price that has to be paid temporally. But fortunately, the greater thing was that Moses was saved. And a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful man, but he couldn't go over. There were consequences, even for him. And he could not go over. And so Moses requested to go over, and it is denied. We understand that. And always remember, and you know, you need to help children remember this, that when you're telling about this, we begin to get kind of bent out of shape with God because, look, he wasn't let... Well, wait a minute. Did Moses get bent out of shape with God about it? No, he did not. Moses understood. And your attitude, when you get bent out of shape with God, your attitude is not right. I mean, before you deal with anything else, you deal with that bent out of shape attitude about God. We are not permitted to have that kind of an attitude. And so it's such a commendation to Moses that, oh, he was sorry. He was so sorry he couldn't go, but he understood, and he did not criticize God because of the decision God made. He understood fully why. He could see that it was his fault, not God's. So it's really a commendable thing that Moses understood that and said, okay. And so he didn't get to go over. Now then, as we go into chapter 4, this chapter 4, oh, it's such a rich chapter. There are some really, really good things that I think you will enjoy looking at in this chapter. Now, we had already gotten into chapter 3, I think. So now we're into absolutely new material as we go into chapter 4. So what I'd like you to do is just keep your Bible open before you there, and we will be looking at some of these verses in particular just to see the point that he's making. And now, O Israel, listen to the statutes and unto the ordinances which I teach you to do them, that you may live and go in and possess the land which the Lord, the God of your fathers, giveth you. I'd like you to notice particularly verse 2. Okay, Jim Cooper, could you read that? Deuteronomy 4 and verse 2. Now that's one of the fundamental verses in the Bible that you quote when you're wanting to talk about the attitude to have toward God's Word. You don't add to it, you don't take from it. That you may keep the commandment as God gave it. Yes?
Same wording in Revelation.
Yes. That's right. That's right. So that's another one. And we're going to be finding others, you know, like to the man that adds to this, the words of this book, to him shall be added the plagues written in this book. The one that takes away from this book, his life shall be taken out of the book of life. That's right. And there are others. There are others right here close by. So, throughout the Bible, that's the emphasis. That's the emphasis on God's Word. Okay, so now notice this attitude. The attitude in verses 1 and 2 is illustrated by Baal Peor. Now listen, what happened at Baal Peor? What person was involved with what happened at Baal Peor? Balaam. Balaam. Now Baal, you know who Baal is? A false god, right? Now, it's so common that when you have a Baal, you have a Baal, a local Baal. So one would be Baal Zebub. All right, that'd be the Baal of Ekron. You'd have Baal Peor. So, but they're all Baals. They're all idols. And so this worship of Baal, this is what Baal Peor was. Now look at what he says here. In verse 3, your eyes have seen what the Lord did because of Baal Peor. Yes? And you all remember. Remember the fornication that was going on, the worship of the idols? Remember Phinehas coming in with a spear, killing a couple that was worshiping the idols and engaging in ritual fornication? Remember that? 23,000 people died. You have seen what the Lord your God did at Baal Peor. The Lord hath destroyed them from the midst of you, but you that did cleave unto the Lord your God are alive. So listen, do you see what he's saying? Those that followed after Baal Peor, where are they? They're dead. Where are those that followed the Lord? They're alive here today. Do you see how that illustrates the point? See that? He illustrates what the blessing of obedience will be. He illustrates it by that story which is so fresh in their memory. The story of Baal Peor. And he says, behold, I have taught you statutes and ordinances, even as the Lord my God commanded me, that you should do so in the midst of the land whither you go in to possess it. Now here's another thing that you could do in your own study if you wanted to. You could start out here and start like verse 2. That you may keep the commandments of the Lord your God which I have commanded you. And then here verse 5. That you go over to possess it. Any verse that has to do with their keeping the land being predicated upon their obeying God and serving Him faithfully. Just note verses like that. And it's amazing how many there are like that. All right, now then, those who followed Baal Peor died. but those who followed the Lord were still alive. Now then, completely following up, you're keeping the law of God. Look in verse 6 now. Okay? Jimmy, how about reading verse 6? Deuteronomy 4, 6.
Therefore, be careful to observe it, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the people who will hear all these statutes and say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people.
So, what's going to make, Moses says, what is going to make Israel respected in the eyes of the other nations? It will make you special in the eyes of the nations. You're keeping the law of the Lord. You're keeping the law of the Lord will make you wise and understanding in the sight of the people. And notice the other points he makes here. Verse 7. Travis, how about you reading? 4, 7. Now look, do you see he's going through a list of questions here. He's saying, surely this nation is a wise and understanding people. That's what people are going to say. They're going to say, what great nation is there that hath a God so near as God is? He is accessible to us. We can approach him anytime. Anytime we know how to approach God, we can relate to God and we can approach him anytime. It's not that I've got to go out and hunt for God and look for omens and signs and all this stuff. I can approach God anytime. They could. They could approach God, they could appeal to God, they could pray to God at any time. And then look at this other thing, verse 8. Scott?
But what great nation is there that has statutes and judgments as righteous as this whole law which I'm setting before you?
Do you see here? What nation is there who has a God so accessible to them? What nation has statutes and ordinances so righteous? I hope that's an impressive thing to you, because that is a really good question. What other nation can you find with a law like this? Well, there isn't another nation with a law like this. And it's kind of interesting to me, and I'm going to do more reading about it. One of the books that I have read in trying to explain away that this was the speeches of Deuteronomy and everything, as they deal with it, one of the guys says, but we have to explain how they came up with this. And they don't have an explanation for how this information and this material and this law and these things, how was that arrived at? How could they come up with it? And the answer is they couldn't without the help of God, without inspiration. So it's a very good question. What nation has statutes and ordinances so righteous? What nation has a God so accessible to the Lord? And Moses is going to do more of this kind of thing as he goes along here. Now in verses 9 through 11, Paul, could you read that? 4, 9 through 11. So what is Moses telling the people to tell their children? According to this, what's he telling them to tell them about? About Mount Sinai. What happened at Mount Sinai? You know that, don't you? Hey, listen, how many of the people how can I, that wouldn't be the best way to ask that question. Let me ask it this way. Would there have been many people present here who remembered Mount Sinai? Those that were 20 years young, less than 20 years old, also the women, also the priests and Levites. But that's right. They could have. That's right. Because you take somebody that was 17 years old, 18 years old at Kadesh Barnea, and you add 40 years for easy figuring, 58 years old by this time. So the generation of, you know, the generation of males that were not killed because they were above 20, that generation would now be, shall we say, in late middle age. Yes.
Back to the verse that says, what nation is in the
yes, yes.
Righteous.
Yes.
When you take the Ten Commandments and look at it, no one can find fault.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
They may not live by it.
Right.
They can't find
no.
Fault.
That's right. That's right. So, you see then how there were people there, they remembered it themselves, and he says, you are to teach your children. And that emphasis on the Ten Commandments will continue here. That's one thing he's going to repeat, he's going to emphasize very much. And he says, teach them to your children and your grandchildren. And remember that when I spoke to you, what? You saw no form. So look at that. Verse 12. The Lord spake to you out of the midst of the fire. You heard the voice of the words. You saw no form. You only heard a voice. Now do you think he's about to make a point? Yeah, he's about to make a point. And he says, the Lord gave you the Ten Commandments. Now, in chapter 5, he's going to emphasize these the Ten Commandments. But look in verse 13. He declared unto you his covenant, which he commanded you to perform, even the Ten Commandments. This is one of the verses that shows that the Ten Commandments is equated with the covenant, because the covenant was based upon they're keeping these Ten Commandments and the other laws that God gave as well. So, in other words, sometimes you deal with people who want to separate the idea of the covenant of God with the Ten Commandments. No, they're together. They're together. And they can't be separated because God himself refers to them here. Moses, the inspired spokesman of God, refers to them, equating them with one another. And he wrote them upon two tables of stone. All right, now continuing the lesson. Well, here we go. Continuing the lesson. The point, this is verses 15 through 24. The point in God's not appearing in a form was that you would have no excuse to make an idol. See, look in verse 15. Jim Goodall.
Take careful heed unto yourself, for you saw no form when the Lord spoke to you in heaven.
Horeb. See that? You remember the point I'm making, that you saw no form. Go ahead and read 16 and 17. And he adds, that creepeth on the ground, that would include beetles. I like to always mention beetle because one of the things that the splendidly advanced civilization in Egypt worshipped was beetles. And also he says in verse 19, lest you lift up your eyes to the heaven and you see the sun, the moon, the stars, worship them. So you're not to worship anything other than God. And so that's the point that he's making in that paragraph. And you see, do you see how that relates to the point, when I appeared to you, you saw no form? See that connection? It's really funny to me, and it's interesting to me, it's a joy to me when I see that, yeah, I can see what the speaker is meaning here. I can see his thought process. I can see what God is saying here. I can see the connection. You saw no form. You know why I didn't appear to you as a cow? I didn't want you making a cow to worship me. I didn't appear to you as a this or that or the other. I didn't want you worshiping me. I didn't want you making an idol and worshiping me. So that's why. And then in verses 25 through 31, look at this. Yes. Now the cross could be made an idol. If the cross is merely a symbol reminding us of the crucifixion, then it's not an idol. Yeah, that's right. Now, like if I drew a diagram up there on the board, and I at one point I drew the cross would merely be signifying that that's the crucifixion. So it's not the cross itself, but it's the idea that the cross was, in a way, the altar on which Jesus was crucified. So, yeah, you couldn't worship the cross. That's not the idea. But the cross as a symbol of the crucifixion, there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. That's right. Let's see. There was something. That's all right. Hey, I'm glad for you to do that. Glad for you to do that. But look now in 25 through 31. When you shall beget children and children's children, and you shall corrupt yourselves and make a graven image in the form of anything, and shall do that which is evil in the sight of the Lord your God to provoke him to anger. Steve Melton, how about reading verse 26? If you do what? If you worship idols. That's right. And I want you to notice something here that is just an interesting point. In verse 26, I call heaven and earth to witness against you. See that expression? Now we know that heaven and earth are inanimate, but there's an expression being made in the face of the whole earth and the whole heavens. This is wide open, public. I am calling you. Now, what I want you to do is look at a couple of other references. Two of them at the close of Deuteronomy. Turn over to chapter 30. Chapter 30 of Deuteronomy and verse 18. Let's see. It's 19. 30 and verse 19. Deuteronomy 30 and verse 19. Donald? All right, look in 32:1. 32:1, Jeff, how about that one?
Give ear, O heaven, I will speak, and hear, O earth, the words of my mouth.
Now, in view of these statements that we have here in the book of Deuteronomy by Moses, calling heaven and earth to witness, I want you to turn, please, to Isaiah 1 and verse 2. Isaiah 1 and verse 2. Now, if you can't find it in the next minute or two, then just listen. Don't worry about it. But hear what is saying. I'm going to read it. Here's what Isaiah writes in the second verse of his book. Hear, O heavens, and give ear, O earth. You see that Isaiah is appealing to the same witnesses, heaven and earth, that Moses had told the people. I'm going to admonish you here, adjure you here before heaven and earth. And so it's just interesting then to see how often the prophets call heaven and earth. Because what do heaven and earth witness? As if they were observing. What have they observed? What did they observe in Israel? Did they remain faithful? What did they see? What did the stars, the heavens, what did they see? The idolatry. They saw what Israel did. So, you know, it's just interesting. Again, here we've got these threads that go through the whole Bible. It's all pulled together. So back here in Deuteronomy, he is saying, I call heaven and earth to witness. And so that's really, really a beautiful thought. Okay, so in 32 through 40, the uniqueness of Israel's God. By the way, we have another question here. Look in verse 33. Did ever a people hear their God speaking out of the midst of the fire? Hey, do you all see how many unique things that Moses is pointing out here? Did ever a nation have laws as righteous as these? Did ever a nation have a God who spoke out of the midst of the fire? Has there ever been a nation that where God set out to take a nation out of the midst of another nation as he did you? So in this speech, Moses is saying, don't be afraid. We can handle the problems. And whom do you have on your side? The awesome, majestic God. Unlike all the gods of the nation. So then he appoints the cities of refuge in Transjordan, Bezer, Ramoth, and Golan as the cities of refuge. And we've already looked at those. So that brings us then to the close of this first speech. And so what's going to be next is he's giving the setting for the next speech, and that will be in chapter 5. Okay? So we will stop for this morning now.